Welcome to Tampa Bay FM's Synergy Connection, where life as you currently live it can be transformed into the life you've always dreamed of. Understanding your synergistic connections is the pathway to your emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental wellness. Let's begin connecting the dots. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Synergy Connection Show. I have as my returning guest today, Kristen Gieselin. And Kristen is a consultant. She's an intuitive and a mindfulness mentor. She has catalyzed positive change for thousands of individuals and hundreds of nonprofit organizations. She's available for personal and business consultations, mentoring, custom workshops, and presentations. And so with that introduction, why don't you tell them how they can get hold of you?
Alrighty. Well, first, Lucy, I do want to thank you for inviting me back to the show. And I'm very excited today to be talking a little bit more about mindfulness. And I've developed something called the Six C's, which has sort of been my pathway in how I apply mindfulness in my life. Mm. So if folks decide they're interested in connecting with me after the show, my name is Kristen, K-R-I-S-T-I-N, Gieselin, G like girl, E-E, S like Sam, L-I-N. And you can find me at Kristen Gieselin MS on Facebook, Kristen Gieselin number 2 at gmail.com, and 727-678-3761. And I do have a website coming. So now that I'm kind of focusing in on these six C's, hopefully I'll be moving toward a more cohesive brand.
That sounds like a good idea. It does. So you're going to talk about the six C's of mindfulness and how it applied in your life, how you use it on a daily basis.
Right. And it's sort of, I think it's both evolutionary. It has like a linear dimension to it. And it's also sort of like if you looked at like a sacred geometry grid,
Know,
where you could plug these in, you know, on different points or you know, six around a, you know, six pointed thing, and they interact with each other. So I think it's both linear and dynamic, you know, kind of interactive at the same time.
Okay. So yeah. Why don't you get us started with these six C's?
All right. Well, the consciousness part, you know, for me, that's really where it all started. For some reason, early in life, I became interested in the psychology of consciousness. And I actually, well, you know, we've talked before, I was exposed to yoga and some other things younger than most people, and I'd had some intuitive experiences. So I did attend Eckerd College in St. Petersburg, Florida, and intelligently, they offered a course actually in the psychology of consciousness.
Wow.
Which I know, how amazing, right?
That is totally amazing when I think back on that. It really is. You were given a gift.
Yes, I was given a gift. And it was in my fourth year of school where I had started to really contemplate, okay, great, I've got this little degree now. I've got something to offer. Where am I going with this? What am I going to do in the world? And as one of the assignments in the class, you had to pick, I forgot exactly what your options were for projects, but my project ended up being starting a meditation practice. So that was where I really, for the first time, experimented with a quiet sitting time on a regular basis and used that sort of as a springboard, you know, I guess, for what was to come. And strangely and incidentally, at the same time, I attended a presentation at the Temple of the Living God, which is a metaphysical church in St. Pete, Florida, which has been there forever. It was like the first metaphysical outlet that was known in Pinellas County. And there just so happened to be a Tibetan Buddhist visiting there one day. And I only put this together in retrospect, like 25 years later, I can look back and see, you know, what happened, or more than that, 35 years later, I can see what happened because I put the pieces together. But there was a monk there, and he gave a talk on a certain type of a meditation. It was, you know, included visualizations, etc. So I started doing that visualization. Now, come to find out, years later, the Vajrasattva practice is actually the practice that he was giving, but he was giving it in a very fundamental way, because that's sort of like a, you know, that's a basic mindfulness type of practice, a purification practice in Vajrayana Buddhism. So I didn't know that at the time, and I didn't know it was going to lead to anything. I didn't know I was going to have a big connection with that in my life, But at the time, I was like, okay, well, I'm doing meditation. I might as well integrate this little meditative technique that I've been exposed to or practice. So that was kind of, I think, where, you know, it was going. And I have to say, my dad also was into psychology and a little bit consciousness. So I had heard the words like subconscious, you know, ego, you know, higher consciousness, you know, the words around consciousness, you know, super conscious, you know, all of that were words that, you know, kind of were familiar to me. But, you know, in the long and short of it, as you know, knowing about it is one thing, but doing something about it is, you know, where the rubber meets the road.
Exactly.
And so I did get the idea pretty early in the going that it was better to do things out of choice, out of consciousness, than out of subconscious beliefs that were maybe driving your behavior, you know, or patterns.
Can you give an example of that?
Well, sure. You know, there's a really, this is very rudimentary, but it works the same thing, I think, in the mind. Like people would tell the story of, you know, whenever they would cook a roast, they'd cut the end of the roast pan roast off. And then, you know, they would inquire, you know, well, why do I do that? Well, you know, well, because my mother always cut the end of the roast off, and the mother doesn't know why she's doing it. And then she asked the other mother, well, the reason we cut that off is because we didn't have a pan big enough to fit the whole roast in.
Right. Right.
So sometimes, you know, we get into ways of being, thinking, doing, believing that are just, they're patterns. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them come out of, you know, maybe shock or trauma in early childhood, or just even, you know, kids are creative and have amazing imaginations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could put two or three kids in exactly the same circumstances and they're going to tell different independent stories about what those circumstances mean, which are then going to create different belief systems that tend to follow out in their future.
You know, I always think of the telephone game that we used to play as kids, where you sat in a circle.
Yep.
And you started at one end, and by the time it got back to the other end, whatever that statement was supposed to be, it didn't sound anything like that. And in probably in a more modern setting, how many times do you go to a movie and everybody comes out of the movie, but you've seen or you've related to the movie differently?
Yeah.
And maybe they don't even remember the part that you related to.
Yep.
So, yeah, it still goes on.
Yep. And that has to do with perception.
Right.
You know, and right. So perception has a lot. There's, you know, the doors of perception. Yes, there are many doors and mm-hmm. filters on perception, mm-hmm. which then affects our consciousness and right. the way we perceive things.
Right.
So this idea of consciousness and the idea, I guess, then also relates to awakening. You know, are we going to kind of go around unclear about what our motivations are? You know, ultimately, to me, when I think of the word consciousness, ideas like reflection and awareness, you know, are tied to it. And then, of course, how do we access, you know, deeper understanding of our own motivations and all that is often through different types of mindfulness practices mm-hmm. or exploratory processes, mm-hmm. which could be proactive, like, you know, going to workshops or reading books. You know, it could be reactive if things are not going well and you need to go to a therapist or a counselor, you know, because you're running into, you know, a log jam somewhere and then you have to get underneath it, you know, to get that freed up.
Right.
So that whole concept of consciousness, first of all, it's, you know, what separates us from the primate, you know, the other beings. I don't know where primates are in the consciousness field. You know, we want to respect all sentient beings, any being that has feeling. But, you know, it does give us the opportunity for change and for spiritual development, which, you know, some of the, you know, lower beings don't have that opportunity. You know, they're mm-hmm. pretty much stuck in an instinct loop. Mm-hmm. You know, so no matter where we start, you know, in our karmic journey, because of the application of consciousness, we have the opportunity to grow and advance. And I don't know, once you get started in that in any kind of a way, it's just, for me at least, so engaging and interesting that it just, you know, kind of kept me hooked in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm. Interesting. So if you were going to apply that C in your life on a daily basis, as we look at each one of these, how do you apply the consciousness C?
I feel like part of that is just reflecting on how you felt about how you did on a given day.
So do you kind of do an evaluation of yourself at the end of the day and just say,
or the beginning of the day?
Or on
an interim basis,
how am I doing?
Yeah. And that is, in the Tibetan practice, there's Vajrasattva, and it's a Vajrasattva practice where you review. That's mm-hmm. part of it, is you say, okay, how did I do? Did I make any major errors? You know, did I lose my cool? Did I lose my temper? Was I, jealous? Checking it out. How did it go? And not that you're going to be judgmental. You, in fact, want to apply compassion to mm-hmm. your own challenges.
Right.
Okay, well, kind of went down, down that pattern again, and often I find people are more, I think people are really wired for development. And when they can see progress in themselves, they feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get where it can be difficult is where they feel like they're stuck in a spot. And then they almost get mad at themselves because they're stuck in a spot.
Like, why can't I get out of this?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to start to maybe even reparent yourself or change, your self-talk mm-hmm. to something that's more gentle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, you're in that spot again. You've been here before, mm-hmm. What did you do to get out of it last time?
Right.
What can you bring to this?
Right.
To be gentle with how you approach that, because the more reactive you are to it, the more it adds to sort of the shock and trauma around it. And then it just, calcifies, instead of it, flowing and moving. It's natural for things to evolve and change if we're not adding more stuck energy to that thing.
Right. Actually, I was on a conference call earlier this morning, and that was actually one of the things that we talked about, was with people who are depressed or anxious. I keep bringing up the inner balance device that HeartMath Institute has created. But when you stay with that repetitive kind of thinking, it does calcify.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who maybe got depressed or sad because of somebody dying or, other kinds of major losses in their life, whether it's work kind of related losses or a pet dying. But if you keep staying there and thinking those same thoughts, week after week after week after week, pretty soon you are going to be stuck. And so depression or anxiety becomes a chronic condition as opposed to something that you're dealing with at the moment and processing and then letting go. And I think it's the letting go part, that maybe the conscious thought pattern is going to be, I need to learn to let go of that. And you're making progress. I applaud you for the progress you're making. And now it's time to gently let go of it.
Yeah, the letting go is something that I think is more challenging
mm-hmm.
than examining for
mm-hmm.
many people, to
mm-hmm.
release the energy around something,
right.
Or to, not go into a state of fear and worry about something.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to release, I think, is almost a more challenging skill than actually active examination.
Right.
So that letting go part, and of course, all of the things that we talked about 2 weeks ago, the Tai Chi, the Qigong, the yoga,
mm-hmm.
Any kind of quiet sitting practices, taking a walk in nature, those are all the opportunities to enter into a letting go kind
right.
of energy.
Right, exactly. By the way, everyone, I will share that I joined a Tai Chi class. I decided that was something that I needed to be doing for myself, in part because of getting older, and it's great with balance, in part because I absolutely love the way Tai Chi looks when you do it. And I had seen it in China and always wanted to try it out. So now I'm an active student of Tai Chi.
Cool.
Yeah, I was excited about it.
So one of the things that I do as an intuitive is I do play around with different card decks. And, a lot of people are into oracle card decks, or they might read the tarot, or there's all kinds of inspirational decks.
Mm-hmm.
And so before we got on today, I brought what I'm calling my bowl of belief. So I have three different decks of cards in a big mixing bowl. And that's kind of how I think about it.
Uh-huh.
Our beliefs shape our reality.
Absolutely.
And we cook up our reality with our beliefs. So it's fun to kind of check into it. And so the card that we pulled out, Lucy said, let's pull a card before the show and see what it's going to be. Of course, we got the collaborate card. And it says co-create and communicate, partner and produce, synergize. And then they have this particular deck has an association with a place in North Carolina called the White Squirrel Shop. So
I have to look that up now.
Yeah. So the white squirrel apparently is quite rare and innovative. It's, you know, it's surviving, and squirrels are very adaptive. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the cards in this deck have to do with adaptive, you know, things. And it just so happens that collaborate is one of the C's, one of the six C's as well.
Right. And then synergy being on the Synergy Connection show. So
exactly.
It couldn't have been a more perfect card.
Right. So when you start to sort of dance with, what do you want to call synchronicity or mm-hmm. serendipity, a lot of patterns show up that are very, right. very interesting.
Right.
So I want to talk a little bit about, for me, how I was able to elevate some bad patterns from youth. And also just my basic makeup. I have 5 planets in Virgo, which means I have a very analytical and potentially critical mind. And in a lot of scenarios, it's very easy. I can be very effective in terms of analyzing what needs to shift or change. That's the blessing. The curse happens to be that then when I was younger and I didn't know how to apply compassion as well, I would feel disparaging feelings about a potential organization or a person or situation, because I would see what was wrong, but I didn't understand so much about how to support my own change or support the change of others or just hold a loving and compassionate energy. Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, the next C that I have on my list today is compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout all of the different processes that we're doing in our evolutionary life of, you know, learning and growing and solving and addressing the issues in the world, you know, bringing with it an energy of compassion is just, it's probably one of the most important, you know, elements that I can really, I mean, wisdom is excellent also. I mean, we definitely want to cultivate wisdom, but if you have wisdom and you don't have compassion,
right,
you're not in good shape.
Right.
Yeah. So that compassionate element really helped me. Okay, I'm starting to think critical thoughts about my employer. Why can't they do this? Why can't they do that? It would be so much better if. Then I'm thinking, okay, what's on their plate? Do they have time and energy to deal with this? How many things are they already dealing with? You know, then you start to process things in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, or, you know, if you're in a snag with a person in a conversation, well, what's going on with them today? You know, what was their day like before we entered this conversation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you start to apply empathy, okay, which is one of the big tools of an intuitive or psychic or healer, when you start to add empathy, which comes out of compassion, you mm-hmm. know, then you're like, oh, okay, maybe I need to approach this in a different way. Or you can see things from a different perspective, and it shifts the whole energy of the interaction and the situation.
Yeah, compassion, you know, being a trained psychotherapist for all of the years that I still work with people as they need it, but I would say that compassion is just a key element, along with, you know, using your intuition, using empathy. But if you're not compassionate with yourself, it's very difficult then to be compassionate with anyone else, because you're constantly judging or evaluating in some way. And I know that when I had my own clinic, we employed quite a few therapists, and that was something I looked for. You know, I was president of the clinic, and when I would interview somebody, I could almost tell whether they would be compassionate in their way of listening and really listening and not making any judgments and not just diagnosing, because unfortunately the insurance companies are all about the diagnosis, but the person that's listening to, you know, a client that maybe has gone through some significant trauma has to be there really in the moment with them using compassion. And that is it's not an easy thing to do. It really and truly isn't.
Yeah, that practicing presence is a kind of a mindfulness.
It is.
And as also I did a lot of counseling and case management, and so you're very much cultivating that sense of presence, you know, for that other person and for the situation.
Right.
You know, and yeah, it's almost like an energy field. You know, it's almost a palpable energy field.
It is. And when the person walks in to, you know, to see you, whether in your case or my case, you can feel it. You can feel where they're coming from. So you have to be able to go there with them. And, you know, that can be, you do need to protect yourself to some degree, but at the same time, you have to be right there with them for them to actually get better. Otherwise, it doesn't work. They're bouncing. It's just an energy field that bounces off of you. And if you can do it together, if you can help them by walking hand in hand with them, then they can make progress, or at least that's what I found.
Oh, interesting. Right. So you have a kind of a permeable energetic membrane, you know, when you're helping people. And so, yeah, as an empath or a healer or intuitive, or when we're, you know, maybe that's not your full-time job, but you're having that kind of a conversation with somebody, you know, someone, a dear one, a loved one, a friend needs to share something, you know, from their heart, in those moments, to be able to sort of be okay inside our own energy field,
right,
and also be open to share, you know, to really listen with a high degree of empathy and compassion. It's a skill. It's definitely a skill.
It is. And you know, I mean, I'm just thinking back over all the years that I've been in the field. Starting out, I didn't know those things. You know, I think I was just there to, I'm going to fix it. But then as you age with grace, hopefully, you kind of begin to understand the significance that somebody might trigger, you know, an old wound, you know, as they walk in. And if you have not dealt with that yourself on a compassionate level, then it's going to stir up feelings in you that you maybe haven't had for a long time. So I would say compassion towards yourself is just critical, you know, if you want to live a mindful life, because there are going to be moments when you're at the grocery store, you're on the highway, and somebody does something that just, you know, immediately triggers that old feeling. And then it's time to say, well, maybe what was going on in their day.
Right. And what I'm hearing you talking about is when you know, you might be noticing that you're having a little bit bigger reaction than the situation actually warrants. Like intellectually, you can see that. That's a time when you can pretty much be sure that something is being triggered that's not from the now moment.
Right.
You know, it's something that you maybe have experienced in the past. You know, for me, it's like if I go out to eat and I'm expecting a certain amount of service and attention, and if it's not really that good, that can be a trigger for me, because I'm taking myself there to be pampered and served. Okay, otherwise I'd make my own food at home. But it comes from, at times in my life in the past, not feeling like my needs were met,
right,
or maybe my needs were met, but not with like, what you would call an energy of hospitality. You know,
right.
You know, and
right.
so I have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm in an environment like that, to keep my cool. So my son, who's in customer service, monitors that if we're together, because he's always concerned for the person who's the receiver of an uncomfortable energy. Yeah.
There, I think it was just about a week ago, they had a really neat story that kind of dovetails with what we're talking about. And there was a father that was driving his daughter to the hospital because she was choking on a penny.
Oh, my.
And so he was running red lights. He was speeding. The police were on his tail and pulled right in behind him into the emergency room entrance. Of course, he rushes his daughter in past the police officers, and they were able to save her because she would have probably choked to death, and she wasn't breathing very well. They still gave him a ticket because of the fact that he had broken all of these traffic violations. And they arrested him and took him, you know, away to jail, and I guess had the mother maybe come and take care of the child. But it was really interesting because the nurses all saw what was happening, and they put their money together to bail him out of jail. And so they were using compassion whereas the officers only saw it in the black and white. You broke these, you know, laws, and so we are going to fine you and arrest you for what you did. And I thought that was so interesting, because if that had been their child, they would have broken all those laws too.
Right. But sometimes people are in a position where they have to do a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's the dance. It's the play of life. It's
right.
The police being police and the nurses being nurses.
The nurses.
And somehow it all comes out okay in the end.
In
know?
The end, I think it did.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure that when he went to court, you know, they probably waived the whole thing. And
right. By the time he got to the court situation, or if he had contested the ticket or whatever. But it's their job to hold people accountable, so they had to do that even under the circumstances. So, and here, once again, just having a little bit of detachment and perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what I was thinking about today that I feel helps me with myself and with others when I'm sort of trying to facilitate a shift for them, either in a business or, you know, in a personal situation, is what is the perspective? You know, the perspective from which you view things really affects your emotional response. And so being able to have sort of a perspective of equanimity, you know, looking at things from all angles.
Right.
And that's where, okay, having this crazy, you know, five planets in Virgo mind has been a great help to me, that it's easy for me to do that. It's very easy for me to see things from many different angles.
And most people cannot do that.
Well,
they see it mostly from their position.
Perhaps, you know, but between my nature and my training, you know, it just usually, I usually see things in a lot of different ways. And that also kind of brings us to, you know, for me, you know, the next word that I wanted to talk about a little bit was clarity. And clarity, I think, has different dimensions. Some of it links to compassion and some of it links to consciousness.
So how does clarity work for you on a daily basis?
Well, when I was thinking about clarity, for me, when I feel, for me, clarity has to do with relaxation, openness, and because of a certain relaxed and open way of looking, I can see and perceive things more accurately, I think, without a lot of emotional reaction. And I also feel like that word clarity for me has to do with, what is my place in this cosmic dance? Okay, where do I fit in? What is my role here? What am I supposed to, quote, be doing? What is my mission? You know, what is my on-purposeness? And so when I can come from a place of, okay, do I want to be part of the dance of drama, or do I want to be part of the dance of peace? You know, what, you know, being clear about what my personal vision and mission is really assists me in making choices about where I put my energy and my time. And when I do end up in a snarful someplace,
that's a cute word.
How do I extract myself? You know, how do I gently extract myself? Because there are times, you know, when you know, it's like a karmic bubble pops out, you know, and you find yourself in an old pattern. You haven't been able to be conscious of the fact that you're going into some place that you don't really want to go. Now you're in it. Okay, all right, I'm in it. I'm in this, you know, unpeaceful state. I've made some alliances or made some promises or done something, and now I'm uncomfortable and it's not really working for me. You know, how can I gently remove myself from that so that I can have that peace and calm, you know, that allows me to operate from a true mind, body, spirit guidance? And so, you know, I feel like,
Are there some questions? I mean, you know, I'm kind of thinking about the listeners out there, but are there some questions that maybe if you were sitting with yourself evaluating your day, you know, just to say, okay, I think you did a great job today. You handled this, you did this, good dinner, whatever. But are there some questions, clarity wise, that you would use then?
Because these I feel like the clarity has more to do with a naturally calmed down mind.
Okay,
like when you throw pebbles into a pond, it makes these rings, and it goes down and it hits the bottom and some mud is stirred up. So I feel like the clarity to some extent actually comes from doing the mindfulness practice, whatever it is. Okay. that it's sort of like it's a natural state. Like the mind is naturally clear unless we stir it up.
Mm-hmm.
But we have habits that stir up our mind.
Right. Right.
So we have to do something to just not be doing the habits. It's not that I think a truly natural mind is clear. Okay, Buddha mind, awakened mind has a quality of clarity.
You know what I'm thinking of, and maybe this will make you smile, but as you're talking about that, I'm thinking, you know, a baby is naturally clear.
Yes.
Yeah, they basically are like, I'm uncomfortable because I'm wet.
Right.
Or I'm hungry, or I'm tired. But, I mean, they have not a lot of stimulation as an infant, necessarily, that is going to impact their life, you know, in terms of other kinds of feelings. They are just clear about where they are.
Right.
And only after we get to be, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, head off to school, we get more and more stimulation going, you know, that then interacts and disturbs that clarity.
Right. And we have more beliefs and we've had more experiences. And so now, right. You know, we're maybe not as in touch with our sort of native intelligence. Our native wisdom and compassion is starting to get some dirt on it.
Right. Right. Well, by the time you get to be, we were just talking before the show started about a gal who recently died named Barbara Marks Hubbard. And she's just quite an incredible thinker, and she was almost 90 years old. So I'm guessing by the time you're in your 90s that you've got a lot of dirt, but you may have sifted. I think she did a beautiful job of knowing exactly what was important and what was her purpose.
Right. Well, I think, you know, if you're lucky, okay, mm-hmm. if you're lucky, you find techniques to go to the unconditioned mind.
Mm-hmm.
You find ways of clearing, like the letting go processes.
Right, right.
You know, or you're able to resolve shock and trauma because you sought therapeutic, you know, healing opportunities. You know, so you don't have to carry the dirt. In fact, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully better not to. And also, you know, sometimes it's a matter of transformation. You know, the dirt could turn into something else.
Right. Well, you know, like health problems.
Well, it could turn into health problems, or it could turn into something good.
Mm.
You know, a lot of times when people meet with adversity, at that dark night of the soul is what sort of opens a pathway to a different type of consciousness or a different way of understanding or, you know, different lifestyle choices.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's through adversity, you know, that we actually do come to greater clarity.
Right.
You know?
Well, then I go back to the wonderful book at Christmas time, A Christmas Carol. And what Ebenezer Scrooge learned, you know, from understanding that his past was not going to get him where he really wanted to go.
Right, right. And, you know, hopefully, I mean, there's a lot of opportunity, I think, currently, you know, with the internet and mm-hmm. so forth, for people to access a lot of high quality information.
Right.
If they're motivated to do so. So it's a matter of, you know, have they had fortunate enough circumstances that even have set the karma up for them to pursue that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people are haven't had that. You know, they're still stuck in other kinds of loops where they're not seeking information or resources or opportunities that are going to elevate their consciousness.
True. Very
so,
true.
You know, one of the things that I did throughout all of the years working and raising my son was I tried to make little retreats. You know, even if I wasn't going to go away, I would, like, okay, my friend's going out of town between Christmas and New Year's. I'm going to stay at my friend's house, and I'm going to take a break. And that would be part of how I would sort of clean some things up and refocus my clarity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I wouldn't meditate the whole time because I hadn't been doing enough meditation to be able to focus for 5 sessions a day. But maybe I'd do some walking, some writing. You know, I'd simplify my diet, get out of the internet, you know, get out of the regular world. Don't talk to anybody. I took time, you know, to do that sort of reboot, you know, or in our area one time I did it at the Franciscan Center, you know, and spent like a couple of days by, you know, I was by myself. That one year I hadn't been doing a lot of sitting practice. So I would do like a couple of prayer sessions. And then I was watching tapes. Oh gosh, what's his name? The guy's name is not coming to me right now, but he's like a famous Buddhist teacher, basically, you know.
Thich Nhat Hanh?
No, the Alan Watts.
Okay.
I watched videotapes of Alan Watts, you know, and so, you know, he was one of the first ones that started bringing, you know, Buddhism, you know, he was like a beatnik kind of guy. So, you know, I found a way to sort of still stay focused in my pursuit of, okay, I'm trying to like revamp my consciousness here for a couple of days. But, you know, I just adjusted it according to, you know, what would work at that particular time. Mm-hmm. But I tried many years. I would, you know, do at least 3 or 4 days, often between Christmas and New Year's, you know, to sort of get that reboot, you know, in place. And it doesn't have to be fancy. You know, you can get a fancy reboot, but you can also just say, okay, I'm turning off all the electronics. I'm going to focus on, I'm going to get some, you know, rice and vegetables in the thing, and I'm going to make a big pot, and I'm just going to eat that. I'm not going to focus on that. I'm going to journal. I'm going to rest. I'm going to meditate, you know, whatever, walk mm-hmm. in nature mm-hmm. and, you know, make your own retreat.
Right. And it is important for people to maybe take that day or two, if they can't take more than that, just to reboot.
Yeah.
You want to ask one of the card questions?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Today I have this big bowl of cards, and one of the ways that I try to stay mindful or connected with the great beyond, you know, with all the intelligence of the universe, is I pull a card almost every day, at least one, mm-hmm. and I ask questions like, okay, how can I be the star that I am? That's something that we say in a James Wanless group that I'm in, or okay, how can I, you know, I ask a question. Mm-hmm. So at this point, what is it that would benefit our readers the most to know at this point in the conversation? So I'm going to dip in here into the deck and see what we in here and see what we get. Oh, okay, great. So what I get is the Art card, okay, and the Voyager Tarot deck.
Okay.
This has to do with sort of, you know, creating your life in an artful way, mm-hmm. you know, being aware that you are creating your life. You can see here there's a big rainbow at the top. There's also it's sort of like a little dark on this side and a little light down in this quadrant. So, you know, sometimes, you know, our life is comprised of places that are dark and scary and places that are bright and beautiful. And somehow it's understanding how to, you know, swirl that together mm-hmm. into something that's cohesive and meaningful for ourselves,
right.
to be able to grow from the times that we're sad or disappointed. And use that, you know, for our spiritual development, you know, but you can't do that if you're plowing through it or plowing over it or not paying attention to it.
Right.
It doesn't work like that.
Right.
So you do have to honor, you know, even the dark place. And then here there's a giant chunk of something that's bright orange. I don't know what that is, but that reminds me of, you know, the lower chakras where our energy comes from,
yes,
you know, and being in touch with our animal instincts, being in touch with the fact that we are human beings, you know, we're spiritual beings living in human bodies, mm-hmm. to not try to like skip over the elements, you know, as we do our spiritual work, to not skip over the human elements.
You know, Dr. Wayne Dyer used to say, and I loved his statement, that we are souls with a body, not a body with a soul.
Exactly. And I agree with that.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I think that's very true.
Yeah. So we want to honor, but we do want to honor the fact that we have bodies mm-hmm. and that, you know, there is an emotional realm to take care of, you know, mental, physical, and spiritual realm to mm-hmm. be involved with, our emotional realm.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the hands here. So the hands go to our next word,
right, yeah.
which
creativity.
Is creativity.
Right.
Exactly.
I thought that was very poetic that you pulled that card.
Right at this moment.
Okay.
The Art card, right.
Right.
So creativity, you know, for me, you know, that's sort of what we're designed to do here,
mm-hmm.
you know, as human beings,
mm-hmm.
is create stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if we find a way, and that's partly why I did not get a degree in psychology, I got a degree in human resource development, is I really felt like all people would be better off if they were doing something that was creative and hopefully being able to bring that into their work lives,
mm-hmm.
to have some form of expressing their talents and inner gifts in the world. I just don't think there's anything like the satisfaction that I get from like preparing for a talk like this
mm-hmm.
or preparing for a workshop and then, you know, delivering it and people seeing the aha moment, you know,
right,
for people.
Right.
There's really nothing better.
Right.
Or if I'm doing theta healing, and that's a very fluid and creative process, and somebody tells, I see something in my mind's eye, an intuitive hit, and I say, oh, I see this and that. And they say, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You know, we are working together.
Mm-hmm.
We are creating the healing together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that there's nothing better for me than that. And I know it looks very different for, you know, different people. You know,
well, I was going to say with a family, especially here in Florida, where we have the ability to garden all year long, you know, planting flowers, planting a vegetable garden, with a family where you can do it together, and then you get to see something emerging that you can actually then consume because it's healthy. And so I think there's, you know, there's glassworks all down throughout St. Petersburg, that classes, you know, for blowing glass. There's pottery classes. There's all different kinds of art. Dunedin has an amazing art center with I don't know how many classes every quarter that they do. So there are many ways for people to become creative, and that adds a new element to their life.
Right.
Another dimension.
Right. And I love all that sort of thing. But honestly, I'm usually, like, a lot of my creativity is, you know, oh, I see something on the side of the road, and I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, I actually have a table in my living room that used to be a bird bath.
Oh, cool.
And I had imagined I wanted a pedestal table. And then I saw this bird bath, and I thought, that's pretty close to table height. It's a little high. And then I found this other piece of glass. So I have, like, pretty glass stones and marbles in the basin of the top of the bird bath, and then the glass piece goes over
on the
top.
Yeah.
And it's all scavenged. That was all free. That was all stuff in my neighborhood that people left outside, and I said, oh, I could make something out of that.
Right.
So, you know, creativity, you know, there's that kind of creativity. Setting up your house in an organized way that suits your needs.
Right.
You know, creativity can express itself in so many different ways.
Right. So, and you have the vision, I think, you know, to see things that other people wouldn't see.
Yeah, I do. I believe I do. I see a lot of things that could be made into something else. Mm-hmm. And that's part of how I feel like I've been useful for mm-hmm. some reason. And where this comes from, I really can't say. A gift, you know, in organizations or with individuals, it for some reason, it is easy for me to see how these different parts of the situation could make into this other thing.
Right. Wow. So, and then the fifth one is collaboration. And that's interesting that we drew that card right at the very beginning. So how do you, like, bring collaboration into your life?
I feel like the collaboration is kind of tongue and groove, so to speak,
uh-huh.
with creativity.
Uh-huh.
In my life, in working in nonprofit organizations, you know, mostly because of, you know, funding limitations, as I went through, you know, working in them, it became very difficult for a single organization to get a grant. So we'd always be working with maybe two other organizations on a project. You know, and so or you kind of had to create, like, a vision in the community in order to get the support that you would need to be successful with a project.
Right.
Even though maybe there was grant money and you were trying to give something, unless people understood what you were giving, then that doesn't particularly have any value or offering. So that's sort of like, you know, the swirl of collaboration, like you and me talking today.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really even know how it's going to go. I mean, when we start, we come here with an outline, and then there is a place where spirit,
right,
you know, comes in, you know, or air or space or whatever it is, and just sort of watching to see how things fit together and
right.
how they can be maximized.
Right.
Having some kind of a unified mission. You know, we have a unified mission of delivering some content here today that will inspire and uplift and help people be more suited to, you know, pursuing their mind, body, spirit goals. That's
mm-hmm.
what we know we're doing
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Within that, you know, there's a lot of freedom to see where it goes.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, both in my, in this part of my life, since I've been doing, you know, more intuitive work, and even in the work itself, you know, when I'm sitting with somebody and I'm looking at a deck, you know, I'm pulling some cards out, and let's say the anger card comes out, I'll be like, oh, well, what's that about? You know, I don't know that particular information, so it is definitely a collaborative process to get the storyline and understand what's going on and what
mm-hmm.
the potentials are,
mm-hmm.
where the challenges and the, you know, the limitations or challenges and the potentials and possibilities. You know.
Yeah, I know. You know, speaking just from my own personal experience, I know that collaborative efforts have been a major part of my life since day one, I think. Certainly, you know, as an adult, I'm not sure about, you know, when I was a child. But I think you do collaborate with your friends, because sometimes one is the leader and you're the follower, and other times you might be the leader and they're the follower. So we learn about collaboration from an early age, And then sometimes it just becomes a little more difficult in relationships if you're not communicating. And so, you know,
we can add another C.
We can add another C. Maybe there's seven of them instead of six.
At least.
Yeah. But I know the communication key, it literally is a key to relationships, is that's how you collaborate. Is you take turns, you know, listening to one another and really being in that moment with that person. And whether it's your child or your spouse or a good friend or a coworker, that is part of that collaboration, is I am willing to hear you out. I'm willing to try to see things from your perspective. And, you know, that's, again, not always easy, because there are some individuals who want to be heard, and once they're heard, they're done, and they're not willing to exchange. But, you know, that's part of it, is learning to take turns in a relationship.
Right. And the other thing that comes to mind for me when I think of the collaboration is, you know, you can just achieve much bigger goals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and none of us are living on an island here. You know, we need each other. And if we are going to kind of like extend ourselves, stretch,
right,
develop, you know, go for solving bigger problems, the collaboration part is a key thing.
Yes.
And yeah, it can be on many different levels.
Right.
You know, it could be something very simple, you know, like, you know, solving, like, I have a broken fence in my backyard right now, and I always end up spending the money that comes for that fence on something else. It's happened over and over again. So then I was starting to think, you know, how else could I handle this? You know, so I have some ideas, but it's going to require some collaboration. You know, and
I have a thought for you that used to work for me when I was in my 20s and didn't have a lot of resources.
Right.
I found people, like, there were a couple of artists,
right,
and I love to cook.
Right.
And so I would fix meals for them.
Right.
And they would paint pictures for me. And
right,
that's how I got some of my artwork.
Right. So yes, I have something very much like that cooking up. And I think I'm going to have like a fall fair at the fall solstice.
There you
with
go.
All my creative friends. Yeah. So
right. And you find know, one of, maybe you can do a backyard
reader,
barbecue.
Yeah, the reader, the belly dancer, the musician, you know, mm-hmm, we're going to, yeah, I'm planning to do that. So, you know, yes. And all of those people, you know, have to collaborate and collaborate regularly.
They do.
You know, because there's not always a huge big funding stream, you know, for the particular thing that they're interested in doing on a given day.
Right.
So, but I feel like we've gotten away from really understanding how small the planet is at large, and, you know, sort of the political climate in the United States and the bipartisanism. And all of that does not help. It is not helpful.
No, not when you're always pointing out fingers at the other person.
No, it's not helping. It's not improving our situation. So this idea that collaboration, you know, living harmoniously with the people around us and understanding how many common situations we're actually sharing and needing, mm-hmm, to address, is very important to me.
You know, the Notre Dame fire.
Yep.
I think that is such a beautiful example of collaboration, because it touched everybody. And I was so thankful that the Crown of Thorns was saved,
mm-hmm,
that it hadn't exploded in the fire and burned up. But I think the fact that even if it takes, like they're saying, it could take 40 years to rebuild, because there were 300 timbers that held up that roof. And finding those kind, if they want to make it like it was, you know, finding those kind of timbers is going to be very difficult even to start with. And finding artisans that can do the type of, I don't want to say plaster work, but just, you know, working with the concrete and everything that was on the outside of the church.
Right.
You know, we don't have artisans that are like that today, or there aren't very many of them, so
right,
they may have to be
trained.
It's going to
be a really interesting study, actually,
mm-hmm,
in collaboration.
I also
heard them talking about they'll have to decide whether they're going to restore it to what it looked like in the 13, 14, or 1500s.
Yes. Yeah.
So they're going to have to decide these things.
Yeah,
so
right,
it's going to be a really fabulous case study
in collaboration.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yep. And, you know, there were some people that I saw put posts up that were upset that we're so responding to, you know, Notre Dame, but we're not responding to world hunger or whatever. And I just think it's sometimes hard to have the same focused intention when it's something that's a chronic situation. Once again, when it's an ongoing thing, it's like we have one Notre Dame, this is one issue, it's one event, right. You know, and so I think sometimes it's easier for us as a collective to respond to a one thing than to the challenges that we have. You know, even though it may take 40 years, you know, we need to deal with how to manage the resources on the planet and take care of everybody from now until the end of time. So when you think of it like that, it's a bit overwhelming.
It is.
And so that, I think, is why people were quicker to respond to this. Plus, the symbolic power, you know, of Notre Dame is so, you know, it's so high, so poignant, and beauty. So you've got things that are maybe in shorter supply right now. There are people like, oh no, this is our one thing that we all love. Don't let this. So I feel like in our heart of hearts, we want to have that sense of collective.
Yes.
We want to have that sense that we can work together to achieve things and that we have shared common values that we all embrace.
Right.
So underneath it all, this particular Notre Dame situation is quite interesting because it brings to mind a lot of different elements in our collective consciousness.
Well, and I mean, just to show another example of collaboration, the young lady who got into what she thought was an Uber driver's car, and then he killed her. I mean, that's been on the news for the last couple of nights now. And the thing that came away, the parents were interviewed on Good Morning America a couple of mornings ago. And I just happened to catch it before I left. And they have a law that is actually being put out immediately that, you know, one of the things that you do is they're asking to have the license plate on the front of the car.
Of course.
So in a lot of states, it's on the back. Florida is on the back. And so you don't always see, you know, when a car is coming towards you.
Right. So if it is an Uber car, they need a front plate.
They need a front plate. Mm-hmm. And so they have actually put this out as a potential law. So, you know, laws don't pass easily, but because of that situation, it was like this mass effort. What can we do to help keep people safe? And yes, you can drive with somebody else, you can ride share, or you know, the newest thing is, what's my name? You know, that you don't get in unless they can tell you who, you know, who you are. And that's just smart. But I mean, you know, this is a collaborative effort again of how do we make a difference so that another young lady doesn't die because she's getting in the wrong vehicle. All right, we need to look at your 6C real quickly, and that's contribution. And let's pull one more card and see if it fits the contribution.
Okay.
Because this has really been fun to pull the cards.
Yeah, we'll do this next time. It somehow, you know, mixes things up. We're acknowledging that the universe knows things, okay? Mm-hmm. We're acknowledging that we are connected to something greater than ourselves when we do this. Okay, so the contribution. What does the spirit world want us to know, infinite intelligence, about contribution and for everyone that's listening? Oh, two cards are flying out. Sometimes two cards come out. Oh, interesting. Okay, so the white squirrel speaks. He says, be authentic. Own your squirreliness, be nuts. Okay, so what does that mean? Do not hide your gifts.
Right.
Do not think that other people will not accept you if you show what you really have to offer, what you really care about. This is so challenging in a world where we're all looking at each other on Facebook, comparing notes, you know, do I measure up? Am I good enough?
Right.
All kinds of disparaging self-talk. So be your true self so that you can contribute.
And so that's honoring your own contribution, your
absolutely
gifts.
Yes, absolutely. Honor who you are, because then you're going to find your collaborators too.
Mm-hmm.
When you honor what you're really all about, you're going to find your collaborators. And then you know what the next card comes in? Contribution creates sustenance. Okay, so as we contribute, okay, like in Al-Anon, I forgot exactly what the phrase is, but basically, the remedy for discord or distress is participation.
Mm-hmm.
If we actually participate, okay, we can sustain this planet. We can sustain ourselves.
So not just stepping back and looking and waiting for somebody else to do it.
Exactly. We need to participate. And yeah. Then, of course, this card is also the water. Okay, so we know, you know, our bodies are water. Mm-hmm. Something like 84% of life lives in the water. Water is going to become the next resource on the planet that we're going to have challenges about if we don't watch our P's and Q's. It's, you know, petrochemicals will be a thing of the past, and it's going to be clean water sources. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we really want to be careful and love our water, mm-hmm. honor our water, keep our water clean, mm-hmm. and flow like the water, you know, become part of the flow, become part of spirit, you know, let spirit talk to you and tell you, you know, where to go, what to do. You know, this is your higher consciousness. You know,
so it kind of goes back to the word conscious.
Exactly, loops conscious. Back to higher yeah. consciousness.
Right,
yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, be in the flow.
Well, being in the flow of life in general is kind of what this program is all about, because I've tried to help people understand that we are emotional, we are spiritual, we are mental, and we are physical. And, you know, understanding those four components will help you with your six C's. And if we add number seven as communication.
Yeah. Or and change, you know, we can add more yeah. C's. I can see that catalyst, being
yeah,
a catalyst.
Being a catalyst. Yeah, we probably can brainstorm a whole bunch of C's here. Well,
community.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that's a part of life that we don't see as much of anymore either, unless you make an intention, you know, to do that. Is people tend to be singular. They may come home to their family, but then it's that smaller unit. And being on the front porch, you know, like they used to, or being on a farm community where everybody kind of pitched in and helped one another and you never had to go it alone, I don't think we see as much of that anymore. So that right. might be interesting for a future show. I do want to remind everybody that if you go to SynergyConnectionRadio.com, if you've enjoyed this show and you feel that someone else would benefit from listening to it, they are archived. All the shows are archived there. And it will be up later this afternoon, so it's available for friends and family that you feel might understand themselves better or someone else better by listening to the show today. Also, under services, there is a company that I am affiliated with called Boomers Forever Young, and the products are totally life-changing. Bob Gilpatrick did the show with me last week, and we talked about diabetes and the fact that there are more than 50% of the population in the United States that is either pre-diabetic or diabetic. So if you know somebody who has that condition or has just been diagnosed, please listen to that show. Have them listen to that show. There are products within the Boomers Forever Young line that will alter that, and we have people that have come very close to dialysis and have been able to stop that progression of the disease. So please listen to that show. I thank you very much for being here with me today, Kristen. I know we'll see more of you in the future shows, and maybe we'll play off of those C's and come up with a whole bunch more that we need to kind of address.
Perhaps we will. So thank you again, Lucy, for the opportunity. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And
let's do one last card.
Yeah, one last card. One last message card. Let's see. What do the listeners need to know?
Maybe for today.
Oh, wow. It's so funny. Another squirrel card. Intuition, of course, it comes up. Pick a nut. Trust your instincts. Follow the feeling. Choose with spontaneity. No thinking.
And what does that actually mean to you when you look at that?
It's trust your gut.
Trust your gut.
Yeah.
And don't we all know that? I mean, honestly and truly, if we listen to our inner being, we know, you know, that I think intuitively we just know that certain things are good, certain things might be harmful. And if we learn to listen, it probably all works out in the end.
Yes. And I am available for intuitive guidance, you know.
Oh, that would be great.
Yes, I'm available for intuitive guidance if people want to contact me. I do private consultations.
So give them your phone number and everything one more time as we close.
Okay. I'm at 727-678-3761. Or you can reach me at Kristin Gieselin, KristinGieselinMS on Messenger. I'm in Facebook. Or KristinGieselin2@gmail.com.
And having known you as long as I have, you're very talented in everything that you do. So I hope people will reach out and contact you. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today at Synergy Connection Radio. And make it your best day. Thank you so much.